Moncrief on News Talk.
For a comic, it sounds like a bit of a risky thing to do to start your show describing the death of a parent. But that's what Aoife Dunn is doing in her new show, which describes her moving on from stuck to unstuck. It's called Good Grief. Aoife, good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So how old were you when your mother died and where were you?
So I was 23 and I was backpacking across Bolivia. And yeah, I think I was like a month into my trip. So I was supposed to be doing the whole, you know, the 9 month thing that like Irish people do to pretend they're figuring their life out. And then, yeah, at 23, I got this call and I assumed it was my mom because she was the only one that had my number. And I picked up the phone. And I was like, hey, mom. And then I heard like a man's voice on the other side. So yeah, I knew it was bad news. So she had dropped dead suddenly, like there was no, at 53. So there was, and she was as healthy and as fit as a fiddle. So there was absolutely no way, you know, any of us had expected it.
Mm.
Yeah. And were then.
Were you by yourself when you got that call?
So I was actually with my friend, and I always say to people, like I joke that mom dying kind of interrupted me nearly getting it on with an Englishman. So that was good.
Yeah.
Thank God that happened, because God knows where that would have ended up.
Yeah.
I was with my best friend. There was loads of us, like loads of tourists. We were on a bus. And I remember the bus was just pulling into a stop. And I turned around to my best friend and I was like, mom's just died. And she laughed because like, it's just weird the things you do when you're in shock. And yeah. And then I had to start the kind of long, arduous journey back to Dublin for mom's funeral. In the middle of the big freeze. It was 2010, so it was the winter of the big freeze.
Yeah, I know. Are you, you know, out of you and your siblings, are you the oldest?
So I'm, my sister's a year older, but she has an intellectual disability. So I've always kind of been the big sister.
Okay.
So I had to come home. 23, my whole life kind of turned upside down. You know, you're young, you have all these big plans. Like I was going to like become an actress. I was going to do all these things. And then there I was kind of back in my small town in Canberra, taking care of my younger brother, making him lunches, you know, dropping him to school. So it was just, yeah, it wasn't the life that I had kind of planned out for myself. And obviously I didn't really have time as well to kind of grieve properly because I kind of entered into kind of big sister mom mode as well.
So then you're at home then and you're essentially being, you've taken over the parental role. What did you do for an income? Did you have to take a job on or anything like that?
Well, the thing is, because I tried to do a bit of Spanish kind of grinds and stuff, but our local community, it was actually so sweet. They all came together and they set up, because we still had loads of bills that like mom had left behind. And we also had to keep paying the mortgage for a few months until the death cert came in. And our dad wasn't around. So it was just the four of us kind of trying to make ends meet in the middle of the winter. And then our local community in Canberra, like they set up essentially a charity for us and they made sure that like all the bills were covered, that we didn't have to kind of worry about a thing in the background. And it was just, yeah, I think I always say to people, like when the worst things are happening to you, that's when you see the best of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was just beautiful. Our community are absolutely incredible.
And how long, and so then for how long after that, did you stay there at home being the mother?
I think like on and off for a few years. 2015, I moved up to Dublin. So I suppose for about, 4 or 5 years, I kind of stuck around. And then once my brother had gotten into university, my younger brother, because he was just 17, like he was doing his leaving cert. So kind of once he kind of got into university and he seemed okay, I felt like, okay, maybe I can move up to Dublin, like slowly start to live my 20s, like the 20s that I felt kind of been robbed. So like, kind of in my late 20s, I still felt like I was still going nowhere and like watching all my friends, you know, like I suppose like meet their life partners. And like a lot of my friends who had done acting, like they had gone into like big movie roles, and like other friends gone into human rights. I saw them, like one was working with Amalia Clooney, and I was like, God, I'm literally just doing nothing with my life. And I felt like I was just kind of stuck in the grief for most of my 20s.
How did that, when you say you were stuck in the grief, how did it affect you on a, if you like, a practical level? Is it because you weren't kind of thinking about what you were going to do with your life?
I think it's just like people, when they talk about grief, they talk about it being like, you know, it's sad that you miss somebody, but nobody talks about kind of the feeling like grief after a while. I always say, like in one of my poems, I say it kind of starts to like root this sort of like tree of darkness inside you. And it really knocks your confidence. It really does. And it makes you kind of feel like your life is less than. You kind of look at other people and you start to compare your life with other people, because you're like, if I move on with my life, am I kind of doing a disservice to the person who's left? And you kind of feel like, do I have to keep grieving her to show her respect? And if I move on and if I'm too happy, is that disrespectful? And a part of me also didn't want to live my life properly, because I was like, if mom's not here to see me do well, that would just break my heart. So with all that, it just sort of trapped me in this inertia for like, honestly, like 10 years.
Gosh. Yeah, but yeah. I suppose, on the one hand, you didn't have that much time. You didn't get a chance to grieve, because then you were plunged into all the practicalities of it.
But exactly.
Yeah. Also, maybe were you a bit hard on yourself?
Oh, absolutely. But I think this is the thing. Like, I think the beauty of hindsight, like I look back now, and that's what my show is all about, is basically like having like compassion and love, even for all the mistakes. So like the show kind of goes through like all the ridiculous absurdities as well, of things that you try to do to pretend you're okay or to get over it, like the boys, the relationships, you know, the travel, whatever you try to do to sort of numb the pain. And there's loads of funny bits in there too, because it's absurd, it's ridiculous. But I think now that I'm nearly 40 and I look back and I'm like, God, like younger Aoife, she did what she had to do to survive. But at the time, no, I was incredibly hard on myself. I think I was so frustrated that I wanted so much, and I just didn't have any confidence to get it. And as the years went on, I was like, I just started seeing my dreams slip further, further and further from me. And I was like, do you know what, Aoife? You're just not the type of person that gets to chase your dreams. Like, just give up on it now. And just, this is it now. This is your life.
Gosh. And you did move to London. And then during the pandemic, you weren't having that much of a jolly time. There was a series of...
Yeah. So like I moved to Dublin, but I was dating a man from London, and we were living together, and I was teaching in a language school. And then, yeah, the pandemic hit. I lost my job. He broke up with me. He went to London. And then our landlord was like, you guys have to move out. So I feel like there, when I was like, so this is 5 years ago, 33, I feel like that's when finally I grieved. Like kind of 10 years later, it all hit me in kind of like the emptiness. I remember just being there, just the tears and the wailing. But honestly, I kind of needed to do it. It was like, it was 10 years coming. And I always look back and I say, oh my God, the worst thing to happen to me wasn't the worst thing to happen to me. And I feel like finally in the pandemic, I let myself break. And there is from that point is when I started to heal. But I think the whole 10 years before that, I was just kind of pretending and, you know, pretending I was strong and pretending I was okay. And the moment that I let myself break was the strongest thing I did. I always say that to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose not. And that's probably not an uncommon experience. People often are kind of scared to face up to the depth of their grief, because maybe there's a fear you'll never come out of it.
100%. Like a friend of mine lost her mom recently, and she's doing so well, and she keeps saying, oh, but when it hits me. But I was like, but it might not, this might be, you know, your level of grief. But I think we're all terrified to feel deep sadness. But the worst feeling that I felt for 10 years was pushing that to the side, was the stress of trying to pretend, look at me, I'm so strong, I'm good. And then as soon as I actually just said, do you know what, I'm not good, and I'm really sad, and I really miss my mom, then honestly, it was so freeing. It was so freeing to just be really sad for like only a few months. And then kind of like from there, like I started therapy and I did what every white girl does. And I was like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to do ayahuasca in Brazil.
Okay.
I'm 35.
And you got all your friends to pay for it?
Yeah. So I was turning 35 and I had no money, and it was going to cost like 3,000 euros to go across to Brazil to do this sort of spiritual healing week. So I texted all my friends. I said, look, I've been there for every wedding, every stupid hen party, every baby shower, every new house. I said, I've never asked you to do that because I've never achieved any of those things. I've never even had a job for you guys to celebrate properly. So I said, here's my Revolut link. send what you want. And oh my God, Sean, I made €2,500.
Cool.
I was like, sweet. Yeah. So making yourself a charity case, it works.
Yeah. But that means you can never, though, in the future, get married or have a child or do any of those things.
I know, I've used it all up now. Bloody plant medicine.
And the ayahuasca, did it work?
Yeah, like I wouldn't, like, you know, people always ask me, I'm like, look, I'm not here to recommend it because it's like, you know, on a real woo-woo level, they say wait till you're called or whatever. But when I got there, like, they'd lost my luggage and I had this really embarrassing moment. I thought I was going to be really cool. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to like heal myself. This is so gorgeous. I'm going to be so sexy. And I actually lost my luggage. They lost my luggage, Air France. So I had to get the shaman who'd studied spiritual medicine for 20 years to come and buy knickers with me. So I didn't speak any Brazilian or Portuguese. So we had to go to this underwear shop. And then when we were in there, he said, the ladies want to know what your butt size is. I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, in Brazil, you need to know your butt size. So there in the middle of the shop with these women and the shaman, I had to turn around while they all decided together what my butt size was. I was like, this is not how I wanted my spiritual journey to start. So it was...
yeah.
Yeah, this is not my, you know, more like Bridget Jones goes to do ayahuasca. It was kind of more like that. But when I finally got to do the medicine, someone said to me like, oh, you know, you're going to meet heaven and you're going to find your ancestors and all this sort of stuff. And after, like, it was a long journey. And but afterwards, it showed me just my life. It just showed me everything I had been living, kind of the life that I thought was so small and insignificant. And everyone else was having a great life, I thought, and I was just grieving. And there on ayahuasca, it just showed me everything I'd been living. And I was like, oh my God, my life's beautiful just the way it is, like, even in all its smallness and insignificance. And I burst out crying with just this deep love for where my life was at. And from that moment, like, I can't pinpoint, but from that moment, my whole life has changed. Like, I find the courage to go back to the stage. Like, I'm a comedian now. I'm on the phone to you. Like, I just, like, I'm still in your tear. Like, I was in the paper today. I was bursting out crying over that. Like, I still can't believe I'm here. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, Aoife's next show, as we said, it's called Good Grief. She will be appearing in the Ambassador Theatre in September. And during the course of that show, I'm told that she will exclusively reveal what her butt size actually is. Aoife Dunn, thanks a million for talking to us today.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.